principle in liturgy and in praxis is that you have a feast when the bridegroom is present, and it's always, you never fast. So it's inappropriate to fast on a Sunday. So we break our Lenten journey today, every year, to lift the celebration. And the church has declared this to be such a case because of the importance of Joseph. And every year we're supposed to lift our hearts a little bit and recognize this great man. Spent a lot of time today just thinking about this last year, because it really was a year ago just now that everything kind of got messy. The vigil of the Feast of St. Joseph, which would have been last night, but a year ago, last night, the day previous. The vigil of St. Joseph was that first Mass when we couldn't gather. It was when we had Coriesu in the window, and a number of you were in the parking lot in your cars to watch Mass from three stories away. And then a year ago today, on this date, was the first live stream that I did. A number of you tuned in. It was for Blessed Sheep. And just remembering, you know, like what we were going through a year ago when we celebrated Joseph. Like we were not really able to lift the fast and celebrate. We did in certain ways, but we couldn't be together. We couldn't worship. We couldn't rejoice the way the church actually expects us to rejoice in this setting of liturgical praise and worship. And so it's a gift for us to come back together. And I think, frankly, to just really contemplate this last year. I said, Lord, what were you doing in all of that? What were you about? What were you trying to bring out of me? Because we all got stuff kind of squished up to the surface that we probably wish wasn't there. God got it up there to the surface, and now it's like, Lord, what do you want to do? What do you want to do about what happened in this last year? And with that, we can celebrate that here we are, able to gather again to celebrate this great man, St. Joseph. Just a few thoughts on your prayer tonight. First, I was looking at the life of a carpenter. So during Lent, we've been undergoing construction in JP2 House. Right around the beginning of Lent, we started remodeling our kitchen. And pretty much the whole time, it's been destruction. It's been, you know, the beginning demolition when you're breaking everything and pulling it out, gutting the kitchen, which is quite fitting for Lent. Things are kind of being destroyed and broken down. This morning, actually, by total providence slash coincidence, whichever, was the first day that they began construction, rebuilding the kitchen, putting up a new frame, and establishing what eventually will be a new place in which we prepare to host our guests. I just thought it would be fitting that on the Feast of the Carpenter, you know, here we are beginning in the house, building a building. So I was looking at the frame that they put up against the wall, and looking at the ceiling, you have to rebuild just a couple of these elements. And we're just reflecting on the art of carpentry, and the eye, as it were, of the carpenter. Because I've been talking to all the different contractors and subcontractors who come, and each of them has their real specialty. They don't do much outside of their special training. And the carpenter is the one who's got an eye for how this all has to fit together and ultimately be aesthetically pleasing as well as functional. The carpenter has to have an eye for beauty. You don't build something that looks off or imbalanced or disproportionate. Traditionally, we recognize beauty to be harmonious, balanced, proportionate, pleasing to the eyes because it speaks an equilibrium, a harmony, a goodness. And so a good carpenter has to have an eye for beauty. I was reflecting on that for Joseph, like what a way he must have known what is beautiful. That having been working with his hands for however long in his life, and all the way up to the end of his life, he had an eye for where things were going and how beautiful they could become. And so with that eye for beauty, and for balance, for harmony, for equilibrium, for fullness, I've just been praying with what it was like for him to set eyes upon the Blessed Virgin Mary. That she, not a construction of human hand, but rather that of divine, represents the most perfect and harmonious and balanced and equilibrious of God's creatures. That the beauty of the Blessed Virgin Mary would bespeak the perfection of the divine craftsman, and how Joseph's craft must have bestowed upon him an ability to see beautiful things, and to see the beauty in things, and especially to see the beauty in the Blessed Virgin Mary. The title of this feast, you know, we have another feast, St. Joseph the Worker. The title of this feast is St. Joseph, Spouse of the Virgin Mary. The focal point isn't actually his foster father role to Jesus. It's the fact that he was espoused by God's plan to the Blessed Virgin Mary. you guys were there last year, I preached on the title, Joseph, the Terror of Demons, because I'm convinced that a part of what earned him that title was the fact that he should have been the weakest link in the holy family. That if the demon had any way, it should have been through Joseph, but he couldn't get in through Joseph. And so what is chastity must have been like? What virtue in this righteous man to look upon the most beautiful woman that God had ever created, and beautiful in every way, interior and exterior. She would have represented the fullness of the Creator's ability to perfect the creature. And so how what draw there must have been in the human heart of anyone who looked upon her. And then Joseph, the type of man arranged by God to receive that perfection into his home. God, knowing that Joseph would protect it and not destroy it. That Joseph would, as it were, hold the blossom of her heart and see its beauty and relish its fragrance, but never do violence to it. Never take it or keep it for himself, but draw very near to it, nearer than any other man was allowed in the intimate bond of a marriage, but to not express himself in intimacy. What a place for a man to abide. What a place for a man's heart to feel itself come alive and relish the beauty of this woman given to him by the divine plan, and yet to know that he was not to act upon his instincts, his animal instincts, but rather to act according to wisdom and to, with the eyes of the heart, guided by the Holy Spirit, to behold this beauty and relish it carefully. How important that is for us, especially for you guys, for adults, to be thinking about the chastity of Joseph. I really think he could be a solution to a lot of the dilemmas that we face with regard to purity. This is a man who is like us in sin, and was able to look upon the most beautiful human creature ever and take no advantage of her, but by his love, invite her to flourish. By his love, protecting her heart and establishing a space in which she could dwell and fulfill the duties entrusted to her by God. By his love, to establish a perimeter in which her heart could blossom and unfold, bringing to birth the word, nurturing it in her breast, raising it upon her lap, teaching Christ the ways of humanity in his youth, all under the banner and mantle of St. Joseph. What chastity, what a pure form of love must have dwelt in his heart. What a tremendous triumph of virtue over sinful nature to dwell so close and never violate. Men, for us, we need that. We need the heart of Joseph. We need to beg him to teach us what that's like. To be able to look upon women and relish the beauty of these women. To look upon the flower of God's creation and find great delight in it and its fragrance, but to not violate it, to not take from it, to not strive to possess it in any disordered fashion. We need men, the heart of Joseph, to teach us what it actually is to reverence, respect, and love woman. Because that's exactly what he spent his life doing with an eye for beauty. And women, how much you need Joseph? How much you need his friendship and intercession to teach you about what it's like for your heart to come to life before a man? And what it's like to entrust the men who look at you to Joseph and to beg him to come into their hearts, and to beg him to teach them how to be toward you in a fashion that they would not deceive you, but that they would cherish and bless you. They look upon you with eyes of love, but with the same heart as Joseph. And how much his friendship to you, women, can cause a blossoming in your own heart, because his love invited Mary's heart to bless without any chastity. We need Joseph so badly. So badly, men, women. Those of you called to religious life and priesthood need him just as much. Because what Joseph also teaches us is that you can live a life and not have sex and be happy. It's as simple as that. You can be fallen and you can cherish beauty and you can love another, but not have to go the way the world tells you. That God himself is able to give a gift to the human heart to restrain itself and to cherish in the same moment. Joseph, in the end, is for us filled with all the virtues that we need. He's a poet. He sees beauty. He's a warrior because he fights to defend. He would also call us forth to fight for you and defend you, that we would never take advantage, that we would not succumb to our fallen instincts, but rather you could invite us forth. I have to wonder, I don't know, and this is pure speculation, but I have to wonder if there were moments when Joseph was tempted, and maybe Our Lady just saw that across his face. She must have known in her compassionate heart what he was dealing with, and how she must have just very gently, with a word or a gesture, called him to a higher place. I said, no, you're better than that. I need you to be better than that. Stand tall, stand fast, because I love you, and I need your love to be chased. Well, we need you to do that for us. I don't need to be like that for them. How important Joseph is in the ways that he learned about love from Mary, with Mary, for Mary, all for the church. That if he failed in that duty, something would have been twisted and corrupted, and he may very well not be here. Because he did not fail in that duty, and assisted by Our Lady, a suitable home was established, in which Joseph beheld beauty, and was moved by it, and fought to defend it, even if necessary for himself, but also from all in the world that was fallen, wicked, and broken. We need Joseph. We need Joseph. We need Joseph. I'm sure you've heard the saying, Yitzhak Yosef. It comes from the Old Testament when Pharaoh sent the people of Israel to Joseph, and he allotted them portions of wheat. In a very real way, Saint Joseph fulfills the same duty, receiving into his home the wheat, the bread of life, and offering it to the world on the altar of his masculine heart, allowing it to come to fullness and flourishing, eventually upon the cross. That Christ himself would use that skill of carpentry as it were, making useful things out of wood, learned by nature from his Father and by supernature from his Heavenly Father, twisting wood to his purposes and making it an effective and efficient and a glorious instrument upon the cross. In no small part possible because of the way that Joseph